Mr. Mervyn, reel 2. You'll be at Bear Park School till you were 10?
Ten and a half. And then my parents sent us to, I think it was Corby Hall. It was known as Corby Hall at Sunderland. Actually, it was next to Ashbrook Cricket Ground. That's where school is. I don't know if you're familiar with Bear Park Ground. Now, I used to get a bus from Bear Park, about half past 7 in the morning, down into Durham, and get a bus from Durham to Sunderland. And,
every morning?
Every morning. And then go up to Grange. It was halfway between Sunderland and Grange Town. We go to Corby Hall. It was taught by Jesuits, which was supposed to be a good teaching.
But religion played a big part in your early life then?
Well, it was really staunch Catholic, you know. We used to drive us to church on a Sunday morning and a Sunday night. And I think, as I say, when the church and English school was a little blip as far as he was concerned. But she got her own way, I suppose, and I ended up with college.
So what about your father?
Well, he was Church of England, and he just, honestly, he didn't get too rude, but he just appeased him, like, you know, as long as you get a good education, I suppose. And,
so what was this other school like?
Once again, it was strict. Once again, it was taught by priests, but it was during the war still. As I say, we used to start school at 12 o'clock on account of the bombing and finish at about 5 or 6 and get back, and then you had homework to do. We always had homework to do. And I remember one morning going, getting to the bus stand at Sunderland, and the teachers were there, the priests, and I was saying, the school's been. I think they said there were landmines. You know, we used to drop these mines with planes and come down parachutes or something.
Because someone was bombed in the Second World War.
Bombed a lot, aye. And the school had been, all the windows were out, and they were being damaged. And on the same night, bins, two big shops of bins, they'd been hit. And you could have got a horse and all hanging all over the place. You know, the police were there, and they had, you know, the road, good big holes and craters all over the place. And we were only off 3 days, we went back to school, and we were sitting in the classroom with no windows or coats on, and if it rained, you got wet, until I could get some glass put in, and it was a little bit rough, like. And when the raids were on, we used to go down into the cellars and wait until if there was any during the day, like.
Cellars in the school? That was your air raid shelter?
Yeah.
Did that happen often?
Quite often, we used to go down there.
Was it a big school then?
I don't know, 300, 400, maybe 200. I don't know. You don't take much when you're young, you know.
I suppose there would be an element almost of excitement, was there, as a youngster in the war and air raids?
Well, there was excitement in the sense that you were. You were keen to see the goodies win, you know, to see you win. I mean, you could tell whether it was going good or not by the way your parents were, you know, and get a worry on when Dunkirk happened and all the rest, you know, you'd get a worry on and things like that. And your uncles and other lads who had brothers and maybe their fathers away, and you know, you'd see them coming back wounded, or somebody getting more to be used. Father had been killed, or his brother had been killed, or something like that. So it was never far away from you. And I suppose you were interested, but in a boyhood sort of way. You know. I remember another morning going down and having a look, and there was a ship sunk in the middle of the river where the bridge goes over the in Sunderland. I don't know. A bit like the time bridge, I don't know what they call it, the Weymouth Bridge, I think. And some of them in there, there's just a funnel sticking up over the water, a ship that's sunk in the middle of the river, and you've been hit by a bomb or something. And then one of the school had an organised trip down to the shipyards, and we saw them repairing ships which had been bombed or torpedoed, saw the welders and the blacksmiths and everybody, you know, patching the ships up and that. And had an idea of what type of work was done, and then that was it. But with the school, you had to take your shoes off, and you went in like an assembly first, and took your shoes off, put them in a locker, you know, put sandals on, and then there's prefects and that, you know, and they were the ace. That was the first kept the discipline as much as a playtime and that. Obviously, the teachers had at school.
Were all the teachers priests?
Yeah. Except the sports. He was an ex-footballer, so he took us for football and cricket.
What did you thought? How did you get on with them?
The priest. All right. He was teaching as far as I'm concerned. No. Sometimes I would get priests from the missions, you know. From the mission priests, they would be out there. If they were back in this country for some reason or other, they might just get them to come and ask us to give a talk on where they come from, you know, what life was like in Africa or India or wherever, you know, and they could ask them questions and that.
Were they strict, the priests?
Aye. All you did as you were told. You didn't get a stick there and then if you got the you just have to report at playtime or at dinner time up to the room, and if that was a bloody thing, and you usually got stick to the best, you know.
So they still dish the stick out?
Aye. You used to get homework. You get a lot of homework, last week. I'll be on the bus. I can have a deal, like, you know. it was a pretty strict upbringing that I had, really. And of course, with travelling to Sunderland, I was always in bed early on the night, you know, because it was early on the morning.
It was quite a long journey, wasn't it, for a young lad?
But there's other lads around about going, you know.
Did any of your peer group go to that school from your junior school?
No, but once we get back to the war, every now and again, there would somebody say, oh, there's an old school boy being killed, or whatever, and the name would walk on a roll of honour in the school.
And that happened at your school?
That would happen in any school, really. But I know there was a lad who I didn't know him. He went to the school and he got the VC, Dennis Bernini, who lived at Easton. And he's down with the VC. He went to the school. And I say, a lot of lads, with the school being in Sunderland, and people, it was like a gathered people in from around the year, you know, South Seas and that. And of course, a lot of lads went to sea, you know, they live in a port. And a lot of lads were lost at sea.
There'd be quite a lot of pride in the school, was there, with somebody winning the VC?
I've been back. I've had a ride around to where the school is, and it's not all like. I mean, it was only a big country house that had been converted into a school. And now the house is still there, it's out of all proportion. It's nothing like what I was when I was there. Mm-hmm.
How old were you when you left school?
15.
Did you have any qualifications?
No.
Were you taking any exams?
No, I didn't take any exams. I got sick of school. I got sick of traveling. And my father got us a job for a firm called Charlie Horns in Durham City. They were a firm of amateur winders. And
that was your first job, was it?
Yeah, I always wanted to go to the pit. As an electrician, as a joiner, as a fitter, anything, you know. He says, you're not going down the pit, I'll see if I can get a job. And I got a job at Charlie Horns.
Just before I carry on with that, when you were in your childhood, were you in the Scouts or anything like that?
I was in the Cubs.
In the Cubs?
Aye.
How old were you when you joined the Cubs? Could you remember?
Yeah, I think.
Where was that at? Was Bear Park.
Bear Park, and I was the Cubs and the Scouts. And there was a church that we gave, and I went in there, but I was in the Cubs.
What unit was that? What did they call?
I can't really remember.
Where did they meet?
Winnie Innes was the Cub mistress, or was she the Scout mistress? I can't really remember. I think she wanted to be a Scout person, but I think she ended up in charge of the Cubs. Oh, and another one, the one in charge then was Walter Granger. He was a teacher, and he was in charge of the scouts, I think. We used to go down to play football in one of the farms, I think, to play football in one of the fields. We used to play football there. But that was a good one.
Was there a meeting place? Did you have, was there a village hall?
Yeah, but just a hood. I think it belonged to the colony. There was a lot of them. You see, there were still pit ponies in those days, and there were stables. And as they were phasing the ponies out, the stables were becoming vacant. And if the scouts wanted to play a club, so they'd say, are you okay? And that was it.
Can you remember why you joined? Did everybody join the Cubs or Scouts? Was it a sort of...
Well, not everybody, but I suppose it was just something good.
Did you wear a uniform?
I don't know. I remember a woggle. I used to wear a woggle and like a tie.
I presume you'd have to buy that yourself.
Oh, yes.
Your parents would have to buy it.
There was a scout shop down in Derry City, I think there still is, where you can buy all this camping gear and your woggles and your hats and your knives and your badges. Yeah, we had to do so much to get a badge, you know. Boy, the neighbour saying you go coop and patch you up, put a plaster on, you got your first aid badge. I suppose it was the reason the parents wanted you to go was to get a bit of self-reliance, to know how to not look after yourself, but know what to do if anything happened, you know. I like that. Learn how to do that.
And there would be things like drill, were there?
Not so much drill, there wasn't. I used to sit around and sing all these camp songs, you know, Quartermaster Stars and all, you know. I didn't go to camp with them. I never went to any camps, but then Ginty was during the war. And stuff was scarce. It was just a meeting place for me.
I can remember any other things you used to get up to.
It's funny is when the mines are in the coal and the coke works, they used to take the coal from the coal, they'd take it to the coke works, and at the coke works they used to extract everything that they could out of the coal. You know, the gas, benzene and everything else that they could extract from coal was taken out. And you were left with coke. And they used to get it and put it in trucks, and they used to tip it in fingers because they couldn't use it, didn't have a use for it. And I remember, I think a man used to get a half a crown for emptying a cork by hand with a big fork, emptying it, half a crown to tip it. And then they would. If they got a sale for it, they'll get another half crown for loading it. And we used to go and make cups and there was heaps and heaps of coke. And we used to go and get, you know, holler it out and not a ton, but you know, holler it out and make a cup and put it all got all because it's scrusty shoes and you just get off your pencil and back, you know, and take the leather off your shoes and that. But then later on they found that they could get coke to burn on fires. And they sold the coke for more than they sold the coal. So you say, I don't know what the price would be, say it was a pound a bag of coal. It would be about £1.50 for a bag of coal. And yet they'd taken everything out of the coal and extracted everything that was good and the coke's a waste and they get more money for it. And there was a lot of railway lines were laid on coke. They used to use it as a pen or whatever. Because in the miners' strike, they were digging the lines up to get the coke out. The lines of Rennie Mills particularly, they used to go along there, and you could see them digging them in. You'd come up where the coke, where the lines were loaded on the coke.
Did you go up to the scouts eventually, or did you just stay in the Cubs?
No, well, By the time I came of age for Scouts, I was going to Corby Hall and I was getting homework to do. And yeah, I really didn't have time. And with the travelling. And then, well, you give me another time, you know.
So you were 15 when you got your first job?
I was apprentice to be an arms grinder. That's the person who repairs electric motors. The smaller ones are like your vacuum cleaners and your holders, but
was that a big firm, was it?
Well, they had a firm at Middlesbrough and they had a firm at Durham, and they were next to Adam's Top Factory in Durham. And the vacuum to the water side is on the opposite side of the three tons, but a little bit further up. There used to be, not the old houses on the other side. The university gobbled all down up and pulled stuff down. And then Charles Horns used to do a lot of work for the mines, the coal cutting machines, the conveyors.
So it was the electric motors, is that?
Electric motors, yeah.
Did they make them?
No, repair them.
Just repair?
And all the work used to come in from all the mines around about, and the coal cutting machines, the conveyors, the pumps, the air fans. It was all mine work that we did. The motors were all for the coal mines, and obviously there was a bit of other work as well. Like on Miners Day, when the shores used to come down to the race course for the Miners Day, if any of the machines, you know, the generators for their, if thieves are packing, we used to bring them up, we used to repair them. That was the type of thing that we used to do.
So what influenced your choice of job?
Well, my father said that was going, that was it. As I said, get us a job at the quarry, Dad, as an electrician or a trade, you know, and he said, you're not going to bloody quarry, you're going down there, and that was it.
So your dad got you your job?
Dad got you a job. As I say, as a last resort, it would have been the mine, but that was good. And if I'd gone down the mine, I wouldn't have had to go into the Flaming Army, would I? Because all mine workers were exempt. And ride us a little bit, you know.
Anyway, how long was your apprenticeship?
5 years. I was 21 when I finished my apprenticeship. I was allowed to finish my apprenticeship. When I was 17 and a half or something, I had to enroll at the Labour Office for National Service. And then you got a form to hand in to your employer, and he had a right to say that you were serving an apprenticeship. If you were a college student, the same thing applied. You got a thing to go to the college. And you sent that back, and then you were deferred until you finished your university course or your apprenticeship.
Because it was normally 18.
It was 18 when you went in. And so I was deferred when I was 21. And I was 21 on the Sunday and I was in the army on the Thursday. I never drew a full man's wage. Apprentices were renowned for being paid no money.
Can you remember how much you got paid when you first started at 15?
Paid 15. I think it must have been about $7 a week or something like that. And it gradually worked up from then. It's got about £4.50 or something like that.
And what did you do with that when you got your pay when you first started?
Mother. In those days, you just handed your pay over to your mother, and they gave you some pocket money. You know, that was it. Money went obviously a lot further than where it goes now. And then I had to go to night classes while I was going to work as an apprentice. You were supposed to go to evening classes. You were supposed to go 3 nights a week there.
And what was that to study?
Engineering. And it started in sort of year one, year two. And you worked your way up to your national certificate. Of course, if you got your national certificate, it was a good help when you were applying for a job. It meant that you had the qualifications as well as the practical. You had the theory in there, you know.
Was that compulsory?
Well, employees used to make it, you know, if you're going to work for us, we would expect you to go to evening classes, you know. for me half the time to make off the flicks when they got a sort of a picture on and rather than going doing maths or something like that, you've got the pictures. Because they usually last about the same length of time. A bit of a misspent youth.
Where did you do this up, these nightclubs?
Down in Durham. Actually, that's where, roughly, where Durham County Library is now, is where the evening school was. I think it was part of the Johnson School, I'm not sure. Well, it's all being pulled down now, but that's roughly the area where the night school was. And of course, the bus stand was still on the north road of Durham. It was the old bus stand, and I used to get the bus in from Bear Park and then get it back out. But you know, since the last bus out was about 10 o'clock at night, and it was, you know, but even if I remember right, even in those days when up there was 21 things like clothes and stuff, they still have coupons, I think. So the rationing, when the war finished, the rationing didn't disappear. It stayed on, and gradually stuff was taken off ration. And it was, even when in 52, when I went into the army, sweets were still on ration, because we got an extra ration in the army, and I used to bring my mother and me from the army, I used to bring her, because she had a sweet tooth.
Because the war would be on when you started work, was it?
Yeah, it was just about finishing, you know, it was just about finishing. And as I say, the election went on for years and years afterwards.
Did you get your qualifications then?
No. when you come 21, you have to go on the army and what the hell do I want to go for any qualifications? You know, some lads did it, you know, and they did well, but I think I spent too many nights at the pictures and what have you. And then again, you know, each year, I moved up each year, but I didn't make the final assault, if that's what you call it.
So what hours did you work in them years?
44 a week, which was Monday to Friday and the Saturday morning. Saturday morning was ordinary time to be getting extra time for it. And it was something like 8 o'clock in the morning to 8:05 or something like 8:05. And then just towards the end of the war, and just after the war, there was a lot of power cuts because either the coal, there was a shortage of coal, I don't know why really. But no, there was power cuts. And all of a sudden, about 4:30 at night in the winter, the lights would go off at work, you know, the power cut in the city. And then the man would say, well, you better clock off and go home. So everybody used to dash out the door, you know. You get out the door, the lights would come on again, but everybody was away, nobody really wanted to go back. But it was quite often that we got a power cut. It was something to do with, obviously in the winter, the surge, you know, the units and that, and the electricity board used to have certain areas for certain times, and they would just pull the switch, and that was it. The types of things we used to repair Charlie Horns as well were sirens for area warnings. And if we got a one in for repair, after we repaired it, we wanted to test it, you had to notify, and even this was after the war, you had to notify the police, the ambulance, and the fire brigade, that you'll want to test this siren at a certain time so that everybody didn't turn up and wonder where it was, because the hell of a racket when they were born. But I had a good apprenticeship. I enjoyed my apprenticeship. I had some of the best years of my life in my apprenticeship. You had no worries. There was a man there to keep you right. You know, and a good set of lads. And we used to, I really enjoyed the apprenticeship.
What was the work like? Was it arduous or?
No, it was interesting. Some of it was monotonous, like a lot of jobs is monotonous. But it was a variation.
Be quite technical as well, was it?
It was for the connections and that. You know, we used to do the lot. There was later on in life when I was doing a big repair of a concert. We've got some manufacturers, people to come out and give us a hand. It was a big job. And we put all the coils in this machine. And then it was about 2 o'clock in the morning when we put the last ones in. And this lad from, he's down from Stafford, he says, well, that's when he finished. He said, what's the matter? We'll start and connect all the wires up. No, I said, it's not my job. He says, somebody else have to come and do that. He said, oh, I'll help with that. We did the lot, you know, we did everything. That's the difference between like the manufacturers and the repair person. The manufacturer does a certain thing, like you have now, the gas fitters. You have a fellow who'll come and put a gas fire in, but he can't put a gas oven in, or vice versa. Whereas we did a lot, we did everything, you know, but I really did have a good apprenticeship.
Was there a trade union?
Yeah, ETU.
Were you a member?
Well, yeah, the union told me to come along and say, hey. You got to join the union. As a young lad, you joined the apprentice there, you didn't know any better. And I, like all, the shop was a union shop, which they all were in those days. They were all union. And it was the ETU that were in. You used to pay your money and that was it. Well, you used to go to any meetings.
So you weren't an active member?
No, never have been. Been on strike a few times, right? When I've been up at concerts in the Cold War. But
no strikes whilst you were in your
apprenticeship? No. It was like I'm not saying a family business, but it was like a general city business. We used to get 2 half-days off for the regatta. You know, nobody else in the couldn't get their regatta, or even the mines didn't get it. But we used to get 2 half-days off because the works used to back on the river, and we could, maybe it's because we could see when they were on the long course, used to go down past the back because everybody used to work in Watson. I think maybe so we might as well lay them off as keep them at work. We used to have to do night shifts, even as apprentices, we had to do a night shift. Usually it was a skilled man and a lad to do the job.
Was there a regular night shift on all the time?
No, just as required. But it was required nearly every other week or something like that. There was somebody working, you know. We started, as I say, that's a great time.
So how big was the firm? How many men did it employ? Can you?
About 50 or 60. And obviously there was the prescription office where your national health prescriptions go and to sort them out, you know, a lodge full of girls, like, and they were across the road. And if there was any dances on in the tunes or the county and somebody was flogging tickets, they would come in and they would say, any tickets for St. Lord, or won't say the girls over there, they go and they go, because that was the way things were, you know. And I'm okay. And even the lads, the police used to come in, and when we're night shifting, have an hour with us, have a cup of tea, and what, you know. And I know there was one night, there was two lads that were arguing at us about who was the fastest runner. And I said, well, look, tomorrow night, bring your son shoes in or something. And we'll pierce it out, and like, from, you know where the half moon is in Durham, it's just down Elbert, the half moon there. From the half moon, the work that up to 4 Park Road was about 100 or 200 yards, the right wall. So about 3 o'clock in the morning, when the right, we'll have this race, so that we put out, and we're walking down the street, down towards there, the half moon. And the night patrol policeman was coming around the corner. And he'd just come around the corner, and the lads had got right, and off, up the street racing, and of course the patrol thought there was robbers or something, and he's belting after, you know, and eventually he goes, he says, oh, I might have bloody known him. I mean, you never come to say, but that was like the relationship that you had with the police and with everybody around about. It was a good time to live.
Since you mentioned it, we'll talk a little bit about what you did in your spare time from work, your leisure time. Cinema, dancers.
Oh, dancers. Every Saturday night, used to come into Durham, have a couple of pints somewhere, go out to Langley Moor, and there's a pub called the Shaft Door. We always used to go in there for a couple of pints. And used to, it's still there, there's a green hut up at Meadowfield, and they call it the Legion. And we used to go up there in time for the first barn dance, because that was about the only dance we could do. The barn dance is where you go around and get hold of all the girls, go around, and then it's half time. And then half time, and then now we used to second half, and then see if we can get anybody home. And we all used to meet at the fish shop at the bottom of Langley Moor about midnight. You know, we used to walk home from Langley Moor up the bear park, which you know, no problem.